Hello, KCIW listeners, and welcome to Curry Cafe, where we put together a panel of volunteers and guests who discuss various topics from whimsical and fun to more serious subjects.
Welcome to another edition of the Curry Cafe. We're here with a group of experts that I've gathered just to talk about this particular subject today. As always, I've chosen some of the finest people I could find. My name is Ray Gary, by the way, and today we're going to be talking about affordable housing and what can we do with the homeless people to get them in affordable housing. So we're going to go around the table now and have everybody introduce themselves.
Hi there, this is Shirley Hyatt, and to my left is
Lee Tooley, principal broker at Town & Country Real Estate, and I've done some development work and so forth. I've trained as a mediator for tenant-landlord relationships, lots of stuff like that.
This is Kathy Justman of the CHETCO Activity Center, and I live in affordable housing. That makes me an expert on this problem.
And I'm Rick McNamer, volunteer at KCIW, and have been both a homeowner and a renter. So we'll see what I can contribute.
Okay, who'd like to start up? Lee, I bet you're just chomping at the bit to say something, right?
I'm happy to say something.
Sure. Let's see. Oh, okay.
So we're talking about affordable housing, and that is something near and dear to my heart because it is so necessary. In this town, there's so many places that don't have enough employees because I can't find any housing for them. I've actually had restaurant owners ask me to find them a place that they could buy in order that they could rent it to their employees. It's that desperate. And a lot of places aren't open as many days a week as they would like because they can't get the staff for the same reason. I mean, it really influences a lot of things in town that we wouldn't ordinarily think of it.
So, go ahead.
And I'm at the CHETCO Activity Center. I hear a lot about this problem. People who've had a home for their whole lives are sometimes faced with an emergency eviction situation, hospitalization, don't know where they're going to live when they get out of the hospital. It's really something you hear about when you are working with seniors and people who come for a free meal.
Well, you know, Kathy, I live in affordable housing, too. I moved up here from the Bay Area in the year 2000, and my sister and her husband had previously moved from California, and she encouraged me when I retired to consider coming here, which I did, and I was looking for a place that I could afford, and I found affordable housing, and that means that it is subsidized by the government. Now, my particular place is also subsidized by a rural development program that comes out of the agricultural department. But it is subsidized, and a lot of people say, oh, it's low income and it's not worth having, and they have basically kind of a negative attitude about it. But it's not true. These are well built, and they're nicely appointed, and if they're managed properly, they're very nice places to live, and there's a tremendous need for it.
Five big ones, and some are smaller ones sponsored by the tribe, possibly, because we don't know where all of the subsidized housing is. But they all have long waiting lists.
Yeah, I was just going to say, you know, just if you want to get on the list, no, you're not going to get there for 3 or 4 years. So it's a real problem. And as you were saying, Lee, when people come here, they say, well, where am I going to live? Well, they can't rent a property. If the people who are the corporations or people you're referring to, they want to buy the property so they can rent it, well, that's still a rental problem. So say a little bit more about that, maybe.
Well,
about the corporation then buying.
Well, that's happening all over the country. There's a huge number of corporations, well, a huge amount of the housing resource that we have overall is owned by these corporations. And it's kind of a monopolizing kind
well,
of
it
effect
is. Yeah.
Because when you have over 50% housing owned by these few handful of people or groups, I should say, they can really control the price and drive it up. I mean, we do have laws about that, which is a good thing, but still, it's a heavy influence in the market, and it makes property prices higher than they would ordinarily be. And really, owning property is like the last place that the average citizen can make a nest egg for themselves. Everything else, you know, pensions and all those kind of benefit programs we used to have gone away.
But, you know, the thing that I think about being an older person is that you don't realize anything on that property until you sell it. And if you are elderly and you intend to die in that home, let's say, then that gets sold only if the people who inherit it are willing to sell it or whatever. But what I'm saying is housing as a nest egg, I think, used to be, well, you buy a starter home, and then when you can afford it, you sell that and you buy a little bit nicer one, and then you sell that and you buy it. So it was sort of like built into the process that you wouldn't just buy a family home and live in it until you died. No, it became a process of, well, eventually you'll get the house you want. But in the meantime, live in a house that you can then fix up a little bit and then
sell
it.
Well, that's like life.
It's like, pardon me?
That's like life. It's step by step. You try to improve your way through your life.
Yeah, but through real estate, I guess what I'm trying to get at is that this is where people's money is tied up in their home. And so they don't realize a profit on that until they sell it. And
well,
so
yes
then
and
where
no.
do you go? You
know? One of the things that is really highly criticized by a lot of people is reverse mortgages. And I'm actually a fan. If you're an older person and you've lived in that house for 1 million years and you've built up a little bit of equity, you can really improve your budget by doing a reverse because then
I agree.
You're not paying a mortgage payment. So you've got all that extra cash flow to see you through your golden years, so to speak.
The mortgage payment is just the mortgage payment, right? You still have...
Pardon me?
That's just the mortgage payment. You still have taxes and interest.
You still have taxes, and you've got to keep it insured, and you've got to maintain it, you know, basic things like that, so that the mortgage lender isn't at risk. But you can do a lot of things with it. You don't just get rid of your mortgage payment. If you have a lot of equity, you could take a cash lump sum out even. There's all kinds of ways to structure it.
My sister did that, and by the time she was ready to sell the house, she had practically nothing left.
That happens.
But, you know, that is part of the equation.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, getting back to the idea of renting, I think a lot of people are afraid to rent because they think that the property won't be taken proper care of, which is a shame because, you know, I've rented over the years from time to time, and I always figured this is my home, so I would take care of it.
You're the
but
exception.
That isn't the mentality of a lot of people, unfortunately.
Yeah, you're the exception. Renters will almost certainly not take care of the place.
I don't
know. It's not the way you would.
Yeah.
Yeah. As a rule.
So I'd like to ask Lee, are we in a housing bubble right now? Is real estate artificially inflated?
Well, if you think about supply and demand, there's a lot of demand for being here. So many of our buyers come from somewhere else. And it's, you know, global warming and so forth. There's a lot of places that people don't really want to live anymore. Forget the Southwest, the South, even Southern California, and then the whole, the California Valley area from Redding on down, that whole...
It's so
just
hot.
Way too hot for anybody to live comfortably, especially as you get older and you can't handle the heat the way you used to, you know. So there's a lot of demand. And as we go forward in time, that's probably going to just accelerate. And one of the weird things about this county is it is pretty much already built out. We have all this open land, but it's mostly unbuildable. There's less than 2% of available land left to build on here.
So
why is it unbuildable?
Too steep, too this, too that, but mostly too steep. We're in a mountainous region, really.
In a flood zone?
Well, there's that too, yeah.
I think you're familiar with where I live. Okay, now recently about 600 acres was sold to somebody. And from what I'm told, he can't build on that for various reasons. One is They can't put in enough roads to handle a subdivision or proper roads and water and things like that.
Fire access, like fire trucks and things like that.
Well,
can't get in.
Yeah, the land behind another portion of land, the huge portion, is owned by the lumber company, and I'd walk on that road every morning, and I was surprised one day to see that they had bulldozed the thing across, that closed it. So I immediately went to the fire department. Said, can they legally do that? It knocks out the fire access to me, or people from my subdivision have to go out through there. We're there, and we can't get through that.
One of the other really limiting factors is water. We just had that agreement up there at Lone Ranch to provide them with water, and we don't even have enough water to do any more development at all. And we're going to have increasing problems with that as global warming, climate change continues. So there's that too. You know, we depend on the Chetco, and it's actually a very small river, and it doesn't have any snowpack.
It's all interweaving, all of these things that have to be met in order for it to happen.
Yeah.
And I think even when people have property that they can build on, they want to make money. So they don't want to necessarily join hands with the government program and maybe have income of a lesser degree, or they don't want to deal with that part of it. But I think being a person who has relied on being able to rent a nice place, I really think that a lot of people prefer, if they can rent, and they're obviously not going to trash the place, but if they can rent, there just isn't anybody that's willing to rent property if they can sell it. I mean, is that true? Do you think
they're not willing to rent it if they can sell it?
I mean, they prefer to sell it rather than to keep it as a rental property.
I don't know about that. I would comment, though, when you're talking about the pressure, the preference to have a rental be more affordable, is that because property is so expensive, you're going to end up being in a deficit with your mortgage in a lot of cases. So, you know, we have very little stock for the amount of people that want to rent that makes any sense on paper, where a person isn't necessarily making a huge profit, but at least they're not losing money on it. And so that's, you know, makes it kind of tough.
I have a question.
Yeah, sure.
Lee, is the government, either at the federal or the state level, trying to incentivize house building, or maybe someone else knows something about this?
I really don't know much about the government programs. You two who do affordable housing, you probably know more than I do, but I will say that one of the things that makes building so difficult is that construction costs have gone through the roof. Here, if you want to build a custom house, let's just say, which is not what we're talking about, but it's something I know a little bit about, you're going to wait probably a couple of years before your contractor can even start. And then you're going to have extreme high construction costs. And corollary with that is that the guys that know how to do these skills are all retiring and getting too old to work and so on. And there aren't a lot of people replacing them. So if you want a plumber, electrician, a general contractor, it's really hard to get the guys that know what they're doing, or even anybody these days.
So there's a skill deficit in our housing shortage. And there are other deficits. Anybody have any other deficits in our housing shortage? What's making the housing shortage?
Well, the cost of materials, I did kind of mention that, but the cost of materials has gone through the roof in the last few years, just through the roof.
And getting, I imagine it's more expensive here than it would be like in Medford. So, I mean, we're out here, we're not on the way to any place. I mean, somebody coming here with a load of lumber is coming here, they're not on their way to San Francisco.
I'm not sure about that part, but it could be an influence. Well, just as an example, I put a window in my living room that had lost its seal, and it cost me $400 less than 2 years ago. And another one lost its seal recently, same window, exact match for size and all. And it was over $1,000.
Wow.
And that's pretty typical. Things have more than doubled in many cases. I mean, I'm sure there's exceptions.
I'm a renter like Shirley and Kathy in a unique situation, and I was a homeowner until my wife sadly passed away 5.5 years ago. And now, granted, we should have set things up differently, but we just didn't. You know, there's a lot of seniors. I don't know what the percentage is, but I'm sure there are a lot of seniors in the same predicament. But I was lucky to have an old friend up here who I've been renting from for a little over 5 years now. And at times, when it looked like she might have been either wanting to sell, now she kept me abreast of all this. But when I was scrambling around looking to find a place, I'm down in Smith River, but general area from Crescent City to Brookings, there's hardly anything out there.
Oh, I know.
To rent, number one. And of course, they want a lot of people that want to rent. It's exorbitant fees just to get in.
Oh, and so, as a young person, how do you even get into the housing market to buy something when a kind of okay, kind of rundown mobile home on a tiny little postage stamp piece of land is over $300,000 now? Now, who's going to be able to do that as a young person starting out in life when you were talking about going up the ladder and reinvesting as you go? But how do you get your start? I just finished a darling little park model. That's a small home, like a one-bedroom home, right by the beach. And it's on the market for $79,500. And that's, you know, it's a lot. It's not pocket change, but compared to $300,000, it's a possibility. And you can even finance those now. And what I'm trying to get to is that I think the marketplace is starting to recognize that there's a real market there for finding solutions. Like, we could never, ever have financed something like that a few years back. And now we have people that will lend on it. So that means that you could do that. You could get into something like that for $4,000 down, and most people could scrape that up. So we're looking at a lot of things like tiny homes and so forth now. And for instance,
I think those are such a great idea.
I'm
really hoping that that kind of thing gains some popularity and people don't see it as something awful, but something really quite wonderful. Plus, you just brought up something that I've thought about, you know, the people who need to have a 6-bedroom, 5-car garage kind of property. I mean, why? Because they can. But... And that's fine. That's the way the world works, you know. But for really common down-to-earth kind of living, where you're living well but not extravagantly, it seems like we just need a total different mindset. You know, if everything is about making as much money as you possibly can without considering all of these other things, then there's always going to be that great divide of the haves and the have-nots. And I want to bring up one more thing and get everybody's opinion on this. Years ago, a friend of mine was involved with a company that was building walls, basically, but then they were branching out to trying to build homes too, but using styrofoam blocks and pouring concrete in the center with the
oh yeah.
This is going beyond needing to have a redwood paneled home, you know what I'm saying? It's mm-hmm. like using other materials that don't rely on the forest,
like hay bale houses and all kinds of things like that.
But will the banks, will the lenders lend to you if you're not a traditional stick built or a classic? Do you see what
not
I'm saying?
So much. It's like, no. But these things are starting to change a little bit. Like, with this unit I was just talking about, it's only been on the market a couple of months, and I've had over 100 inquiries. Now, that's a market that is not being served if you get that many inquiries about a property like that. So we've got people who want, maybe their parent has been widowed and they want them closer. That's a perfect solution for them. Young person who's just starting out, like we talked about, that's another solution. Somebody who's on a limited income in some way or another, where, you know, they can afford to be in a park next to the beach and, you know, their nut is going to be like $700 a month or something instead of whatever it is now to rent a place, what, $1,200, $1,400?
So that's in a park. So they have the $79,000 to buy the house and then they have a park rent on top of that?
They would have a park rent, yeah. So... Yeah. you know, sometimes there's a parent or a rich relative that'll buy it for them. You know, that's always nice if you've got it. But if you finance, then your payment's going to be on top of that park rent. Now,
what
I'm talking about is at the beach, which you can find them for about $500 a month, and maybe depending on how much money you can put down and so on. But if you can't put much down and you finance, you're probably looking at maybe $600 in that. So, and these are just like really rough top of my head figures. I can't stand up for them very well. But if you're talking about $1,100 and in a few years, if you're a young person, you know, maybe a decade or so, you could have it paid off. Now your rent goes down even lower, right? So, yeah.
So I think in the valley where there were big fires in Talent and Phoenix and that valley area between Ashland and Medford, they're using modular housing, building it on government land, I think, and then there won't be a land fee. You'll make payments on the house you're living in, and it's a modular home. Now, I live in 450 square feet, roughly, and the tiny houses would be like half that, about 200 square feet, right? But a modular home could be about 400 to 500 or 600 feet, depending on if it's a three-bedroom and you have kids, or if it's a one-bedroom for an older couple. So these things, if the government owns the land and then makes a program for putting modular housing there, and they provide the infrastructure and they provide land, then we could have a housing boom because I'm talking about in places where it's not mountainous like here and you know, rivers, floods, and ocean and steep hills. But if you've got level land, there could be it'd be more than incentive, you know. It would be providing something as the foundation of building more housing. And I think it's got to go that far because we are 20 million homes short. I don't know if that's the number of housing or the number of homeless or the number of unhoused families. But when you count all the cities, it's like there are millions of people looking for housing.
Now, tiny houses, I understand there's a tiny house subdivision or a community, so I've never seen it. Could you tell us about that?
I can tell you something local.
Yes.
What's that one right on the
On the river.
So you know about it. Why don't you talk about it? Because I don't know about it.
There's two of them. They've been there for a long time. If you drive up the North Bank, that little community that's just off to the right, what am I trying to say?
If you're talking about there, those are park models.
Park models are bigger.
Yeah. They generally run in the 400 square foot range, 400 to 500 square feet.
But it used to be you couldn't... What am I trying to say here? You couldn't get a loan on those.
That's what I'm talking about. What you can do now is you can get a loan on them, which is great. I mean, it's amazing. And, you know, that's different from a tiny home that tend to be really compact, like the inside of a small RV. You know, everything does double duty. And, I mean, these are actually pretty comfortable homes. I can live in 400 square feet, no problem.
I live... every winter for many years in a motorhome that, let's see, it was 8 by 31, so whatever that comes to as far as square footage. And it was recently.
240.
That's pretty small, yeah.
Right.
the only problem with it was it drove me crazy. If I wanted to get my computer out, I had to go to where it was and put it on the table and move everything. It was a real hassle.
Yeah.
I couldn't do that much longer, but.
I find 400 or so is a lot more comfortable. You don't have to do that much manipulating of your things.
So I was under the impression there's a tiny house community that has more or less just been completed. Do you don't know about that?
I don't know.
That people were going and looking at models, and it's somewhere on the river.
Oh.
I don't, it's my understanding.
You sure it's tiny homes and not park models?
Right. Now, maybe people were just describing to me as tiny homes when, in fact, they were park models.
I really don't know.
The problem with if park models, if they're built like most mobile homes are, they're probably pretty trashy and they're going to start to wear out and run down very quickly.
If you maintain them, they can be kept up forever.
Yeah.
It's that a lot of people, how can I say this, that don't maybe have the habit of maintaining a place.
Right.
And then they let it go. And yeah, they'll fall apart on you. They sure will. But normal, easy, reasonable maintenance will keep them going for a long time. I had one that was a relative of mine had it over at Rainbow Rock. And it was a single wide from 1973. And it was like it was brand new, you know. And I know a couple others like that. It's just a matter of how much you keep them.
I remembered what I was going to say earlier. It was... I've recently been delivering Meals on Wheels, and about half the houses that we deliver to are really, really substandard housing. In Sacramento, you could have like gotten free rent from your landlord for having a house like that. But these are mainly probably they own it and it's they're paying land rent. You know, these are in like parks. But they're old, you know, 70s, 80s, 90s trailers or modular homes from that era. So, like, they leak, they're moldy, the windows leak, you know, they're drafty.
People who live in something like that don't have the money to keep them up.
The kitchen doesn't work. That's right. They have Social Security and nothing else, and they can't fix it up. So this is like some of the housing that we have in our county and in the South County here. Really close by, I'm saying. Really, really poor living conditions.
I bought a manufactured home in Tucson, which is a strange place when it comes to real estate. We were looking for a winter home for my sister-in-law, basically, and didn't want to spend a lot of money for it, so we were running down all the, you know, all the $75, $80, under $100. And it turned out our way of searching was we would find these in the paper or however, and then we would look them up on Google Maps and get an overall view of them. And if the place next door wasn't a Hell's Angels compound, then we would go look at it. But everything in these places we were looking at, bars on the windows. But eventually we did find a place that had been owned by an elderly woman, and it was run down just because she didn't have the money to keep it up, for one thing, and it was a cheap one to begin with. The kitchen cabinets were actually made out of some kind of a fibrous material that I called cardboard, and being a woodworker, that's the first thing I had to change. I made cabinets at home and brought them here, but this poor woman had things that needed to be done in the house that she could have fixed for $100, but she didn't have $100, evidently, or $100 to spend on the house.
It used to be that Habitat for Humanity had a program to fix things up. I don't know if it's still going. We did have it. I know. I just haven't heard anything about it lately. It doesn't mean it doesn't exist.
Yeah.
And they would come in and they would, you know, re-insulate and seal things up and help you manage all those kind of things if you were low income. You're going to say?
Well, yeah, I had a question about the across. I live in Smith River, and right pretty close to the ocean, and across the way, all kinds of homes, but they're all, as far as I know, all vacation rental homes. Mm-hmm. Don't those have a big impact about, and I've always kind of felt maybe there were like too many of those around here to impact people that want to stay here.
Well, and now this is the big debate that's going on around the B&B thing, too.
Yeah.
So many vacation homes are being rented out, B&B, vacation, I forget all the initials, but anyway.
VRB.
VRB, yeah. And anyway, it takes a big chunk out of the housing inventory. On the other hand, you know, it brings people in. There's an economic benefit to it. Personally, it's nice that we have that option to bring in that economy, but you know, it does make a real bite in the inventory that we have available for people.
Isn't it likely that park model you're trying to sell is going to turn into a rental property?
No, it can't be rented.
Oh,
nothing in a park can be rented or B&B. Short term or long term renting is not allowed. And the one exception is Whale's Head. I don't know how they did that, but they're allowed to do that. They have a central property manager there at Whale's Head, and they can rent their places out. But everywhere else, forget about it.
The problem with these parks, or one of the problems, is they're owned by individuals or corporations, and they sell them. I know somebody who has lived in one for about 6 years, and her rent has gone up several hundred dollars in the time she's been there. And the services have gone down. Her rent used to include things like, I think she said, electricity and things like that, and now it's just garbage collection. So her cost of living has gone up significantly. There's not anything she can do about it.
There is.
And I've also heard now, just heard this the other day, that one of the mobile home parks that's down on Seaview is closing.
I don't know.
Oh, okay.
Well, don't you think, I hate to sound like too much of a liberal here, but don't you think that basically the overall look at why there are a lot of wealthy people and why there are so many people who will never attain any kind of standard close to that, it's like the balance is so out of whack at this point.
And yeah, it is.
I remember when I lived in Palo Alto, of course, which was just absolutely a lovely place to live, I must say. But a house that we bought for $29,000 was a beautiful little home with a couple of bedrooms and fireplace and wood floors, et cetera, et cetera. You know, that house sold for $3 million a few years ago. Now, that's a huge jump. And I'm going to blame the Silicon Valley and the highly paid people in that industry for that kind of a jump. But it seems like it's not just the Bay Area. It's sort of taken over, that there are a lot of people who have earned a tremendous amount of money, but nobody else is really catching up to them. And so the standard is so wide open. And I don't know how we're going to change that because, you know, it seems like I have nothing against money. Don't get me wrong. It's just that the greed factor to me has stepped in. And then these other altruistic things that we're talking about, they're really not altruistic. They should be basic. It should be basic that you have a decent place to live.
It should definitely be a basic.
So it's a
responsibility of local and state and federal governments to make sure there's enough housing. But I was thinking that if we compared the statistics of how many more jobs there are, say in the Bay Area and Sacramento, that the housing hasn't increased nearly as much as the number of working people has increased. There's a huge deficit in housing because nobody is trying to make the statistics go together. You know, you can't have, twice as many workers and only 50% more housing and expect people to have houses and places to live. Somebody should be measuring these statistics.
What would it cost for somebody's moving into town, a retired couple with their dog, and they want to rent an apartment? What would they be looking at paying?
If you've got a dog, probably.
Yeah, that's why I mentioned.
Or a small dog might be.
And there might not be an apartment even available.
Really?
Well, it is crazy trying to find a place to rent these days. I can't tell you the cost because I'm not renting, but I know there's a lot of people searching and very few finding. It's tough. I know people that have jobs in this town that are living in their cars.
Yeah, which kind of segues us a little bit into the homeless people. I'm sure people drive by and they say, "Well, why don't they get a job?" But having a job in this community doesn't mean you're going to have a place to live.
True.
But what can we do to change that balance? I mean, we can all sit here and complain and lay it all out. That's the way it is. But is there any move afoot where we can help to change this kind of situation? It might be a matter of changing minds and hearts of people, but it's also, it all comes back to how financially feasible things are to do and how much importance people put on those things. So, I don't know, like, here we've got, the world is covered with water almost, and we need to desalinate the oceans, but people say, "Oh, we can't do that, it's too expensive." Well, in the end, where is your priority? Is it too expensive? Then if it is, then we'll never do it. But are you following my lead here? I mean, there are ways to conquer some of these issues, but somebody has to be willing to do that. And it's only those people who have a lot of money and good intentions and the ability to make it happen. And the rest of us just sit around and complain, you know?
So in Saudi Arabia and Australia, it's worthwhile in some places to make drinking water from ocean water. It takes a lot of energy, but it's worthwhile because that's the only drinking water they're going to have, especially if what's in the rivers is going to go to the crops. So all over the world now, some people have to pay as much for a bottle of water as for a bottle of fuel. So that is where we are with water.
And the Tucson area in Arizona, is, from what I understand, are already overbuilt as far as their amount of water they have, and they're continuing to build. New subdivisions are going up here and there, and it's
And that's crazy. Kind of what we've got going on here, too. You know, we just don't have the water to do much else. And then the other thing we have to realize that we're working against is that it's beautiful here. We want to live here because it's gorgeous and you can have a nice country lifestyle and still get most of the services you need. And that's not true in a lot of places. So a lot of retirees, whether it's the hot weather or whatever, they fall in love with being here. Five rivers within a 30-minute drive if you're a fisherman. It's like heaven, you know. It's just so hard to balance that out when you've got so many people wanting to be here, retirees that have a little bit of money. They maybe had an expensive house like a, you know, bungalow in L.A., and they can come up here and buy an oceanfront. So oceanfront has basically doubled in the last few years.
What about the Windchuck River area and going up into the hills from there? Is that, that's all part of Curry County, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and they have their own fire station. Is there a water usage problem
well,
in there?
Well, surely the infrastructure isn't there. You have to provide your own, like, septic tank.
Oh.
Well, you know, if you go that far, beyond the houses that are already up there, you would have to provide your own infrastructure, just like you would in Lone Ranch, right?
Well, Lone Ranch is going to be a development, so it'll probably be developed by the owners that are doing the developing. But we've got lots of areas that are outside of the city limits that are, you know, you've got to do your septic, you've got to do your well. And there's a lot of property that looks like it's buildable, but you can't get water. If you drill a well, you're not going to get anything. And that's very common. In fact, another factor that's staring us in the face about as far as water is concerned, I can't tell you how many properties around here, but it's a high percentage that are getting their water out of some creek or another. They're just throwing a pump into the creek. I see a lot of nodding going on.
Yeah. I don't exactly have that, but I do have water from a spring.
Yeah. And a lot of those are not legal. They just threw a pump into the nearby creek, and that's how they get
mine
the water.
Is legal and certified
well,
and well-maintained.
Well, I'm glad you heard that. We wouldn't want to tell on you on the air. But anyway, and one of these days, somebody's going to start clamping down on that kind of thing, and then we're going to have some real problems because there'll be a lot of properties that'll be condemned because they don't have a source of water.
Well, they should condemn substandard housing before they start condemning people for getting their water from a not legitimate source, because you should be grandfathered in if you built that place 40 years ago. But if you live in a trailer that's 40 years old and, you know, the kitchen doesn't work anymore, that's where you should start fixing problems.
Well, for sure. But in terms of this problem with the illegal water sources, you know, it's only going to come to the surface when that area gets more built up, right? And nobody's going to do anything about it until then. And then the person that loses out is going to be the person that doesn't have it in writing on their deed.
Did you say the Lone Ranch project is going ahead, the one that's been on
I've
the books for
that.
A long
I've
time?
I'm not up to date on that particular property. Yeah, I've heard that they're planning to move ahead now.
And that was supposed to be so-called affordable housing. Am I correct?
I think there's a percentage of it that has to be affordable. That's my...
So I wonder what that really means. What
it's a small percentage.
Is.
It's you know, most of it's going to be McMansions on the hill.
Yeah.
And that could be a problem, too, I think.
Well, especially because we're giving them our water.
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah, you don't, it's kind of a harder, you don't want to restrict anybody, I guess, but maybe we do, because where I live on Ocean View Drive in Smith River, my landlord, who's been there 40-some years, said all of those houses weren't there not too long ago.
Oh, yeah.
And there's a lot of them up there. But, and Lee, you touched on something earlier I had, this area being so different, because I came from the Sacramento area,
mm-hmm.
and man, it's apples and oranges down there. It was just, it's still going on. I think that we talk about affordable housing and we need to build, but all Sacramento has done that I remember is just leapfrog at suburban asphalt after another and more McDonald's and Walmarts.
Yep.
That's what I see.
Yeah.
I didn't like that. But then again, we need the homes, apparently. So, but up here, do we, I hope we don't want to be, you know, scraping down trees off of the hills and putting in developments. What do you do?
There's real limits on that, though, because of the amount of unbuildable space. So we're not going to see that happen anytime soon. But you've been through Lincoln City lately, like in the last 10 years. You cannot drive down the main street of town. It's 101, and it's laid out just like this, where it's all strung out along the highway. And because of that, there's only one way to get from one end of town to the other, pretty much, practically speaking. And it's impossible. You cannot drive in that town.
What town did you say?
Lincoln City, just up north.
Oh.
Yeah. I wanted to say one other quick thing about your friend that is getting priced out of her mobile. There are restrictive laws about how much you can increase the rent each year, and it's tied to the cost of living, something like that. So once a year.
But that is why some of those parks close. When the landlord gets tired of those restrictions, they just evict everybody and then sell it for something else, like a shopping center.
That may be the case of the park I'm talking about. You probably know what the park is. All the trailers are kind of in a circle, and then the middle of it is just a grassy field, and I've been told that that's like a Superfund site or something. Does that ring a bell with you?
Gosh, the only one I know that's in a circle, it's a lot of older single wides. And it's down in Harbor off of Ocean View. And it's got a grassy circle in the middle because mm-hmm. you can't do much with it because that's a septic field.
Okay.
But anyway, I haven't heard anything about it being condemned. There's houses for sale there.
Somebody mentioned that at a happy hour the other day that somebody had to move out of there. But that doesn't mean it's true.
I've been visiting the mobile home parks years ago. It was because I was looking for a place to rent, but currently it's because of Meals on Wheels delivering. And some of those places are probably in danger of closing. One of them is expanding up the hill from where the trailers are. I don't want to name any of these places or say the locations of them, but you know, there's some guy or corporation who's decided they're making money on the land rent, even though the trailers there are really substandard. You know, they're going to open up another road, branch out. Other places, they want to, you know, evict everybody and make a shopping center. And that's the way it is, because as Shirley said before we started, she said, the Almighty God is money, and we don't have enough incentives to keep people in the business of providing affordable housing. So the person who built my affordable housing and Shirley's affordable housing, he's an old man, and he built the most recent one 10 years ago. I live in that one. It's the newest affordable housing in town. And I asked him a couple times, are you going to build more? And the last time I asked him, which was this week, he said, oh, I'm retired. I'm not building anything anymore. So if he's gone out of business and nobody else is going to do it, we're not going to get more housing.
Well, could you fill us in on, like, I don't know how you could put a number on it, but if you do affordable housing as a tenant, what kind of rent do you pay, or do you pay any, or is it tied to your income? How does it work?
It's tied specifically to your income, and then anything that you can deduct, like legitimate medical expenses, et cetera. But there are some rules, and you have to meet those. And I brought this, as a matter of fact, to talk exactly about what that subsidy looks like. So for for a one-bedroom apartment here. Where are we going here? $347 a month.
Oh, my God. That'd be so wonderful.
Yeah.
And they're nice.
But if you were not in the subsidy, supposedly the market rent for that would be almost $700. So
at least.
Pardon me?
At least. Yeah. I know people that, you know, rent out a room for $500 a month. So it's ridiculous.
So it's all, you know, they can't just keep upping it and upping it and upping it ridiculously just because they can, because there are rules. But it does go up. And my rent has gone up just incrementally a little bit. But everything else goes up too.
That's true.
So, you know, I've never understood why people think that they're making more. They're not. Everything else rises up. And there you are in the same spot, and they say, well, I'll get a raise. Well, then everything else will go up. So it's just numbers on a piece of paper at some point in time.
But if you were to rent, if that person who gets the place for $375, did you say something like that? What kind of income would they have to qualify?
Well, it's about a third. You pay about a third of your income after all this deduction.
So theoretically, that'd be somebody who's making around $1,500 a month or something like that.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. That's good to know.
Well, for some reason, I only pay about a fourth of my income as monthly rent. So maybe it's because I turn in my dental and, medical costs.
Reasons. Yeah.
And so I'm pretty diligent about that. Other people might neglect that reporting. But, I want to get every discount I can get.
Well, for those people who are interested, I'll just say that the first property that I saw when I came here is called Azalea Reach, and it's over by the park. And there are, I think, 3 four-bedroom apartments in there.
Wow.
Yeah, which I was surprised too. And quite a few 3-bedroom apartments and 2 bedrooms. And what they have the least of are 1-bedroom apartments. And there are a lot of single people who are sort of out in the cold, so to speak, because they are all by themselves, but they have the least opportunity.
Right.
And so Pelican's Perch, which is a senior property that is only for qualified people over 55, the rents are higher there. They're not subsidized in the same way. But those, again, are for 1 to 2 people in a 1-bedroom apartment. So that's what this kind of subsidized housing looks like. But people don't realize, you know, if you did sign up and you were on the waiting list, there are some 4-bedroom apartments. I mean, they're huge. Hmm. I've been in them, and it's just amazing. So, you know, it can be done, but people have to be the right kind of...
You have to plan ahead, and if you know that you're low income, yes, you must plan ahead. Because the way you end up homeless is you haven't planned ahead, and your landlord has decided they don't want you anymore, and that's how you end up homeless.
By the way, I apologize to all the math majors out there. My mouth was a little screwy a minute ago, but anyway. Speaking of ending up homeless, I mean, I think a vast majority of people that are unhoused are there because we threw all the people who needed help out of the mental institutions. We didn't used to have homeless folks, and this is one of the reasons why. And I get kind of sad because I have friends that are consider themselves progressive and generally are, and they're really negative about the homeless. But where do you want someone who mentally can't get themselves organized enough to keep a job? Where do you want them to go?
Well, you know, you mentioned that a progressive person would be against that because it was the progressives that did that thing with the mental health or the mental. Mental institutions, the idea was, how can we keep somebody confined, lock them up when they're not going to hurt anybody and they're not endangering themselves or somebody else.
A threat to the public.
Yes, and so if you're a little silly or you walk around dressed funny or you sleep on the ground or whatever.
Reagan jumped on the freedom bandwagon. It was like I listened to an audiobook about this subject. There was like the freedom, release the birds. Yeah. They shouldn't be locked up if they don't want to be. And Reagan jumped on it as a money saving idea. That's so it was both and a liberal part of the mental health services field. And there should have been something for them to move into when that happened, but they ended up on the street. Now, the mental health problem is also a drug problem because there is housing, say, for veterans, but they have to have no drugs and no addictions and not even maybe smoking or drinking. I'm not sure about that part. So, you know, there's a mental health problem. There's an addiction problem, which causes mental health problems, and they overlap.
Or maybe the outcome of a mental health problem.
Well, and also, don't forget there are those people who are just priced out of their homes because they don't make enough money. And I'm not trying to start an argument here, but if you are living in a housing project, for example, that is owned by somebody who raises your rent and says, well, if you can't afford it, I'm sorry, you have to move out. Where do they go if they're already paying the maximum for what they can afford? And so some portion of the homeless are people who simply can't afford any apartment in the area that they live in. And so they, I don't know, it's very complicated and it's very sad, but so very many people who end up in that lifestyle who say, you know what, screw it, I'm just going to live on the road. I mean, they can take their house and shove it, kind of attitude, you know? And then we have that to deal with, which is the person who drops out of society and says, I'm just not going to live the way they need me to live. So it's an attitude that's taken over. I mean, how many homeless people are there that fit into the category of the returned vet who's on drugs or who is has a disability, blah, 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 blah? I mean, there are probably layers of people. Like you were just saying, Lee, that some of the people who were actively working still couldn't find any place to live.
Right.
And, you know, there's something wrong with that equation.
Absolutely. And I can imagine scenarios where somebody has a job, they're not making a lot of money, but they're making some money, and suddenly their lease is up and they have to leave. Oh, God, this reminds me of a place that I was unfortunately part of seeing it sold, down there on Hemlock Street. And it was a cute little cottage. He'd lived there forever. And the owner just wanted to make some money. And to your right, I mean, it was worth something and they'd inherited it and so forth. But we tried and tried and tried and found to find a place for, I think his name was Dwight. This is many years ago now. And I don't even know what happened to him finally. But there was just nothing he could do. He didn't have enough money to get something else. He lived there very cheaply for, you know, decades. Anyway, it's very sad.
It,
and
it's
I can
a
imagine
terrible,
scenarios.
It's a very layered problem.
Yeah.
It really
I can
is.
Imagine scenarios where people think, oh, I'll just give up my house temporarily until I can find something, keep my job, live out of my car for a little while, and I'll put some money together, and then I'll, you know, be able to do something, and then it turns into years, and the car goes away, and, you know.
Yeah.
And the city makes a law against living in your car.
Yeah.
Or sleeping in your car, even, right?
Yeah.
I've said since they passed that ridiculous law that will never hold up constitutionally, I don't think, that we should have a sleep-in. Get a bunch of us together and we park right in front of City Hall and spend the night there.
And back to renting again, I think we're all in roughly the same age area. When I was young, I could bounce around from place to place for quite a long time was what I did. But now it's just a complete different time, and it just isn't that easy anymore. And back to also about people becoming homeless, a lot of nuances, how they become. My granddaughter and her husband, who live in Yuba City, signed a year lease a year ago. Then they re-signed it again here just a couple of months ago. And all of a sudden, the lady said, nope, I'm selling, you got to leave. Now, they could, I guess, fight it. But they didn't, and they were lucky enough to actually buy their first home down there, but it was iffy. And that's just one little example of how people can get the rug pulled out from underneath them. because they're young. Now, they're, my son and daughter-in-law are there. They could have moved in, but maybe what if they weren't? Where would they have gone? I don't know. And the other one is, we talked about lot rent for mobile homes. Lee, maybe you know this. I have a friend in a park. I won't mention the park either, but very low income, struggles to get along. All of a sudden this year, the lot rent jumped from, I think, $550. It jumped up $90. Now,
wow.
I don't know. That didn't sound like a fair raise, but what are you going to do?
No. Sometimes, and I can't speak to this particular law as far as how much you're allowed to, you know, what the exceptions are, but in some circumstances, because it was sold to somebody else, the park has a chance to reset whatever the entity is, because I really don't know about this particular law, but there are limits as to how much you can raise things in a park for sure. But there probably are some kind of exceptions, like maybe when the park changes hands or something like that.
So we have less than 5 minutes left. Is that correct?
Yeah. So, less than three now.
I'd like to say something again that Shirley said at the beginning. We are the two affordable housing residents. So if you are living on the edge and there's any chance you might be evicted in the future, you know, you need to plan ahead and get yourself on a waiting list, because there's a lot of affordable housing in other cities and a little bit here. So if you think that you are in danger of losing your home, you need to get yourself on a waiting list for affordable housing. And we can also pray that our government, if we vote right and elect the right people, will look at statistics and say, we don't have enough housing for the workforce. We've got to build some, and we've got to take this in hand like they've done in Phoenix and Talent, and we've got to build housing.
And we have to stop having politicians in Congress encouraging people to have beautiful babies.
Oh, gosh. Well, there's that. That's a whole other show.
Yeah.
And another show we really, well, we didn't get around to talking about is all the possible cooperative-type alternative housing situations. I would love to talk more about that. One of the things I would like to do in this little village, this unit that I was just talking about earlier, is put several in a row there. And that's, you know, it's not quite the same as putting together an alternative situation, but it would be like that in some ways. And I'm trying to figure out how we can do some creative things here. And
that's,
would it be okay
idea.
If I gave my number if somebody would like to talk to me about these kinds of issues?
Sure.
It's 541-251-1885.
And I want people to know that there are five places here that you should sign up, get on the waiting list. Some of the young families who live in subsidized housing have gotten their act together, gotten better jobs, whatever it is, and they've moved out. And so that doesn't happen, you know, on a daily basis, but there is opportunity, and those two or three years go by faster than you'd think, so...
And 30 seconds go by faster than you think, and that's what we're down to. So we're wrapping this up right now. I want to tell everybody that you've been listening to The Curry Cafe on KCIW LP in beautiful Brookings, Oregon, and we're about ready to get out of here now. Maybe we'll bring this up at another time and finish what we've been talking about.
All right. Bye-bye.
Thanks so much. Bye.